Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Saturday, November 16th, 2019. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me on this weekend. Hope your weekend's going well, and you're chilling out, relaxing, and maybe just chilling, kicking back, and listening to this show. So whatever you may be doing, I hope it's enjoyable, and hey, we're about to get into the holiday season. Things are about to turn in a big way into Thanksgiving, which means automatically Christmas if you celebrate. And right into the Black Friday holiday, and boom, it's shop, 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 nonstop ads and emails from everyone you've ever done business with ever looking to get your money. And so get ready for that craziness, and get ready for the craziness that will be 2020. I mean, 2020 is shaping up to be, especially on the political end, good God, especially here in America. I know I have people that listen overseas in Canada and other countries, but 2020 is our next presidential election, and I will just say it is going to be a circus around everywhere in the United States. It's going to be an absolute zoo. So if you like entertainment, well, hey, there's lots of places to go to enjoy it on many news outlets and podcasts. I cover all that stuff. But hey, this is not political. This is not a political show. This is wrestling. This is about WWE. And first off, I'd like to mention that while I brought live shows back, and they're staying, I brought them back for a reason. Live shows, I think, are good for interaction. They're good for feedback instantly from listeners. The format that I use to go live doesn't have the super high quality that I'm using right now, because this is a pre-recorded show. So the format that I use on Blog Talk Radio, it does make the sound not as high quality. And I'm looking to see if that's something that they can resolve, or if it's just the way it is for everybody. So just an FYI, I know that when I did the live show last week, or a couple of days ago, that it didn't sound as clear, crisp, and fresh, and high quality, high def as it does right now. So I am aware of that. I just have no control of it, as it is not my platform. So we'll see what we can do about that. But live shows are here to stay. Live shows are always going to be here to stay for the foreseeable future. And always feel free to call in. And if you'd like to call in, just don't forget, you got to press one. A lot of people forget that or don't know. But once I give you guys the number, which is always going to be the same, you just press one and you can get yourself on the show. So anyway, with that out of the way, once again, guys, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for the support on Patreon. I do mention it every single time, but it's important to me. I know it's important to the patrons who, you know, hey, donate to the show to get an ad-free experience and support the show in a monetary way and with your comments and everything else. And I take that seriously when people give me their money, even if it's just a small amount of money, to have an ad-free experience and just as a thank you and supporting the show. I really understand that, you know, we all work hard for our money, and I hope that those of you on Patreon feel like as if you're getting your money's worth, or maybe even more so, and there's lots more to come. And so thank you so much for those of you on Patreon. And if you want to join that group of people, you can head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get an ad-free experience for every show we do. And you get yourself a shout-out, and you can get yourself a video shout-out on Twitter. And the list goes on. You can get a podcast all to your own. The one that you do, you choose the topic. You can come on the show, and we can talk about any topic you'd like, just as Zach Smith did just the past week. And so there's a lot of cool things that you can do as patrons of the show. And I really thank everyone, up and down the line, and, much appreciated. So it is getting closer and closer and closer to the beloved Survivor Series pay-per-view about a week away now. Survivor Series is on the way. And just so you know, tomorrow, Sunday, I'll be bringing on Zach Perez, who is our AEW podcast host. Does an awesome job, and he's going to be coming on the show tomorrow night as we discuss, get ready for this one, a Knickerbocker Arena / Pepsi Arena memory podcast. And what that means is the arena that is near us, which is was originally the Knickerbocker Arena, which was then the Pepsi Arena, which is now the Times Union Center, located in downtown Albany, is a very special place for so many reasons. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it, and I won't tell you what the moment was, but it was rated, a moment that happened at that arena was rated the best moment of Raw ever. It was voted on by the fans and was presented on a Monday Night Raw. I don't know if it was the 20th anniversary of Raw or whatnot, but it was voted that. And so pretty cool to be a part of that. And there really have been a lot of big moments here in Albany, believe it or not. It's not a wrestling city that you can think of right off the bat and go, oh, yeah, Albany, that had this, this, and this. But there's a lot to be had here. So without giving any spoilers away, you'll have to tune in tomorrow with Zach and myself as we cover our memories of the Knickerbocker / Pepsi / Times Union Center that is in our neck of the woods. So tune into that. And then on Tuesday, I'll be joined by Anthony DeMarco, who is going to be hosting the Raw Review Show with myself on Tuesday, and then back into Wrestling Nostalgia Wednesday. And then, of course, Saturday is going to be a perfect time to bring on Ashley, who I'm really excited to talk to as well, because it's a preview show for Survivor Series, and very interested to hear her predictions, and I haven't really come up with any official ones yet, but you'll have to tune in next Saturday for that. So there's your full week, and of course, don't forget, you have your AEW and NXT review shows also mixed in there on Thursday, Friday. So boy, you guys got a lot of content coming, and let's jump off here. Let's start with the SmackDown review that I think was noteworthy in a few segments. Of course, we had the nonsense of the invasion of the NXT crowd. And, of course, that is a sticking point with me. But let's just go through this. Let's go through this one by one here. So the show starts off with Baron Corbin and Ziggler and Rude, who are just this de facto team, although we didn't really get an explanation from Rude and Ziggler why exactly they are aligning with Baron Corbin, other than to say the obvious of, hey, well, we got nothing else going on, we lost the tag team championships, and we don't have anything relevant to do, so let's go with a heel that doesn't have backup, and we can be his heaters and take the falls for him and all that stuff. So Corbin taunted the Philly fans, declared that SmackDown is no longer the big dog's yard, but rather his kingdom, and then called himself the real leader of SmackDown. Ziggler and Rude put over their match with Shorty G and Mustafa Ali for the last two spots on the SmackDown, on Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. Although, what's interesting here, before we get into some of the nitty-gritty here of this segment, Shorty G and Ali were already part of the SmackDown team. Am I correct? And then Ziggler and Rude decided to, per Baron Corbin's request, attempt to take the place of Shorty G and Ali if they beat them in a tag match tonight. Well, who signed off on that? Number one, it sounded as if, and maybe I'm not understanding the presentation of this, and maybe it was just a match that was already on the card, and I was unaware, but it sounded as if Baron Corbin decided to arbitrarily just mention this match. All of a sudden it's official, and we get no kickback from Shorty G and Ali of saying, hey, no, we've earned our spots here. We'll fight you, but you're not getting an opportunity because we earned this. I mean, so if that's the case, that Baron Corbin decided to just arbitrarily mention it, it just happens out of nowhere, and the babyfaces don't disagree or push back on it and just say, yeah, we'll just put this up because why? Right? I mean, so if that's the case, I just don't understand that. But moving on. So we get this dog coming out, right? And this because Corbin challenged Reigns to come to the ring and watch the match. Reigns' music played, and somebody in a dog suit made their way to the ring amid dog yelps. And that was the only entertaining part of this, were some of the parts of Roman Reigns' music. They had puppy barks instead of, like, the dun-it, dun-it. They had, like, woofs. That actually was slightly entertaining, but outside of this, it was just a total mockery of the lead brand's lead babyface. It was just WWE, sometimes at its worst. Again, not the worst thing they've ever done. But I just don't see how this helps Roman Reigns, who hasn't, by the way, have we even heard from Roman Reigns lately? I don't remember the last time I heard from him what he wants to do, what his direction is, what his mission is. Like, who and what is Roman Reigns up to? Beyond just being the video game-esque character of the corporate machine pumping out what they want their lead babyface to do that overcame cancer and now is a spokesman for every kind of charity you can think of which I knew they would do, but I understand why. So beyond that, I mean, we haven't heard from Roman Reigns. It feels like months. I just don't know what he's up to, why he's here. He feels like he doesn't want to be here again. I don't know how Michael Cole gets so excited to the point of orgasm every single time he comes out, although I'm sure at this point, let me just put this in perspective here. I absolutely despise when Michael Cole says, "Here comes the big dog." I even saying it makes me cringe. It's embarrassing. I feel icky just saying it. It's such a forced nickname to begin with. It's extremely forced. It never worked years ago, and it still doesn't work years later. It never felt right. The Undertaker, who originally had that nickname, it felt right because he was the big dog in the yard. He was the locker room leader. He was that man, the guy that everyone would go to for advice, and a true locker room leader by default. Now you have Roman Reigns take that nickname and have Michael Cole yell it as if, you know, it's the bottom of the ninth in the game seven of a World Series. Every single time he comes out, he just can't help himself but yell that it's the big dog. I don't get it. It's a nitpick with me. I think at this point, Michael Cole's just trolling the fans. I don't know why, if that's the case, or if it's not. It's Vince McMahon instructing the announcers to always make sure that any time a wrestler comes out, especially to the likes of Roman Reigns, that you have to yell their nickname. It can't ever just be Roman Reigns, you know, it's Roman Reigns, or it can't ever just be Braun Strowman coming out. It's got to be the Monster Among Men. Why do we always have to have a cute nickname? Why? Why does this always have to happen? It can't ever just be the name of the individual. We have to get cute and do the nicknames. And I understand you're going to say, well, it's marketing. Well, you know what? Sometimes there is something called the law of diminishing returns. And what that means is the more you do something doesn't always mean the more you get back. The less you get back sometimes is a result of you overdoing something you shouldn't be overdoing. And I think at this point, they need to understand the law of diminishing returns of constantly shoving nicknames down our throat or yelling them as if it's something that I'm supposed to get excited because you get excited. That's not the way this works. And I heard somebody on another podcast, and don't worry, I'm going to get back to SmackDown. Don't worry. I know some of you say, you don't even review the show. You just go off on tangents. I don't mean to do it. I don't mean to do it. It's the way my brain works. I really am going to try to stay focused on SmackDown, and it's right in front of me. It's in writing, so I won't forget. But I heard somebody on another major podcast, use your heads. We probably can all figure out there's a few major ones out there, not sponsored by WWE, that mentioned that that Roman Reigns, the booing has gone down. The rejection of the Roman Reigns character has really, really lessened over the last year or a little more now. And it's due to the fact that WWE hasn't made him the centerpiece of the show. Now, I have to strongly disagree with this, because while Roman Reigns and his rejection reaction has lessened, I will agree with that, it's not because they have made him not, they have not, it's not because they have stopped making him the centerpiece of the show, the focal point of the show, because they have. You want to know how they have? Take a look at Kofi Kingston's reign. What did they do when Kofi Kingston for 6 months was WWE champion? They made sure Roman Reigns was the focus of the show, of that awful whodunit attack that ended up being the biggest flop of the summer, with Eric Rowan being the man who attacked him, which nobody cared, no one still does. And we had Roman Reigns open the show. It was the video package that opened it. It would be Roman Reigns at the end of the show, the last few minutes, even after a Kofi Kingston match, or Kofi Kingston would be even buried in the middle of the show, having Roman Reigns be the lasting image of the show. We saw it on SmackDown. We saw it on Raw. So don't give me that Roman Reigns is not the focal point of the show just because he's not in a championship picture. Roman Reigns still is the focal point of WWE, and you know it by the positioning that he's on the show, how he's positioned, and where he's positioned, and what he does is still telling me, and all signs point to, Roman Reigns is still our focus, even if he's not champion. I would love somebody to dispute this, because WWE doesn't value championships the way that championships should actually be valued. You don't have a lot of times champions closing shows. You don't have champions sometimes main eventing pay-per-views, because it's usually about guys or gals that they are trying to push beyond the championship, and the championship isn't the most important thing on the show, and not, it shouldn't be all the time. I agree. The personal issues and hot rivalries should occasionally trump a championship match. I get it. But the argument that Roman Reigns is not the focal point of WWE and hasn't been is nonsense. Nonsense. WWE cringed when they had to force the championship onto Kofi, gave us a quote long run to say that they at least gave him a lengthy championship run, at the same time still telling us that Roman Reigns is the focus of the show without actually telling us, and using the excuse that he's not because he's not in the championship picture. So that's what I'd like to say to that. And I'd love to mention that show, but I don't want to give free advertising. Although I still listen to it, right? And I look, other wrestling podcasts, I have no beef with anybody. I think the other wrestling podcasts out there, especially the bigger ones and the bigger websites, are big for a reason, and they do a good job. So I'm not knocking them, but I really, really disagreed with that argument. And the other thing about podcasts while we're on it, and then I'll get back to SmackDown, I pinky promise. I tweeted out a couple of days ago about the After the Bell WWE podcast. I'll give that one by name because it's an official WWE podcast. And Corey Graves, who has these stars come on his show, and it's designed and structured as if it's supposed to be this inside information, you know, kayfabe breaking, fourth wall eliminating, just, you know, inside look into things that maybe you shouldn't hear, or maybe we shouldn't have heard that, or but it's forced so much. And when you also look at who's hosting it, where it's being presented in terms of a platform that it's being presented on, WWE, and it's an official WWE podcast hosted by an official WWE employee with contracted talent on the show, we're supposed to believe that Corey Graves is actually going to give true answers and get a true response from what that individual is actually feeling about any questions that they may be posed. The answer is no. If that's a podcast that we're all supposed to believe is some kind of inside information, you, number one, if you don't see that it's not, you're being fooled. And you haven't been paying attention to wrestling that long. This is a state-run radio. It's hashtag state-run radio. That's exactly what the After the Bell is. And Corey Graves is a great talent. It's not a knock on him. I think he's quick-witted. He's a great host. He's got all the tools. But the problem is, it's like having a government-run radio, or excuse me, better example. It's like having a Republican radio show with presidential candidates on the show that they don't present questions in the way that are geared towards a positive Republican answer. You can't have it. You can't have a state-run radio and have people believe that this is a true, unfiltered response. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. WWE, all they're doing is putting their foot into the podcasting world because they know how big it is. And yeah, it's doing great. It's at the top of the wrestling charts in terms of the wrestling category in iTunes, so props to them. But again, it's nothing more than WWE saying, oh, we recognize how lucrative podcasting could be. Let's put Corey Graves on, who can talk well, and pretend that he has guests that are going to give you an answer that's not going to jeopardize their employment with WWE. Nonsense. You want an example? Dean Ambrose on Stone Cold's podcast on the WWE Network, 4 years ago? Take a look at that and how uncomfortable that was, because you had Stone Cold on there giving and asking questions to Dean Ambrose that he couldn't answer truthfully because you are also on your employer's network with your employer watching. You can't answer that question truthfully. It's a conflict of interest. You just can't do it. And people are going to realize this is state-run radio. Seriously, why wouldn't it be? Okay, moving on. Back to SmackDown. See, I told you. Back to SmackDown. So we had a guy in a dog suit make his way to the ring. And again, this is the kind of thing, and I promise there's good stuff in this show. So those of you who are saying, all I do is complain, which I hear that all the time. I hear people complain about my complaining, which doesn't that kind of make you a hypocrite, though, right? So this is the kind of thing, when I see this stuff, and when I see the Lana Rusev stuff, that it's the stuff that if you had a friend over that doesn't watch wrestling but knows you're a wrestling fan and sees this on there, all that this stuff does is validate and confirm the reason that they are not wrestling fans. It's embarrassing stuff. It's when they think of wrestling, they think of this stuff. And when we see this stuff, we want to distance ourselves as wrestling fans from it. Because it's straight embarrassing. It's lunatic, lunacy, Looney Tunes. The three L's. That's what it is. It is nonsensical garbage that they think is entertainment, and the things that they do to try to separate themselves, WWE, tries to separate themselves from their own identity of being a wrestling show by throwing in this alternative cartoon garbage, does nothing more than detract from the product that wrestling fans like to watch. And you don't believe me? Listen to the crowd reaction. Listen to the crowd reaction. I've said it before. I will say this again. Their writing team, I'm sure, are talented people. But you have to have them, A, actually be wrestling fans to understand the nuances of booking for wrestling fans. And two, not have them book with the motivation of trying to please Vince McMahon and not please the fans. That is the key. That is the problem. That is at the crux of the issue of the writing that people bitch about week in and week out, is that the writing team, because Vince McMahon is ultimately their boss, are writing for their boss. Not if they actually have a kick-ass idea that they say the fans are going to love. This is what's going to be great, but I don't know if Vince is going to like it, so I'm not going to even bring it to the table. That is the problem. I don't believe that they don't have talented people. I'm sure they have ultra-talented writers there. But I have an issue with the fact that they are trying to please their boss and not trying to please their fans. At the same time, I understand that they have a vested interest in self-preservation. They are trying to make sure that they don't get fired because they need an income. And I understand that. I'm totally sympathetic to that. But this is the life and culture we're living in with wrestling in WWE land. Okay, moving down the line here. Let's move on to SmackDown a little bit more here. So we get to the actual match here of Shorty G and Mustafa Ali versus Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. So, good match, as I expected. Here's some good stuff. I did not expect anything less from these guys. All involved are excellent athletes. All involved are ring generals to a degree, although Ali is new. He certainly possesses the qualities of an early ring general. Shorty G has paid his dues. Shorty G is an Olympian. Dolph Ziggler, grizzled vet. Robert Roode, grizzled vet. All four. I mean, this was a very good match. Very good. But what happened? Ali and Shorty G defeated Ziggler and Roode. After Shorty G delivered a German suplex to Ziggler, and Ali finished him with a 450 splash for the win. So Ziggler continues his amazing streak here of after his return of losing to Goldberg, getting a sweet chin music from Shawn Michaels, and then disappearing, coming back, winning the tag team belts with Roode, losing them quickly, and then losing here. So Ziggler has a record of 1-8. I mean, Ziggler is Ziggler is a guy that you could do a whole podcast on because of how many missed opportunities, yet how many awesome moments he's had. Ziggler is a guy that is one of those individuals that you will always look back on as, what could WWE have done better with him? How did they miss the boat here? What was missing? What was missing from his character, or what was missing from WWE to give him that true opportunity? And yet Ziggler has really maximized the minutes. He is a beloved wrestler backstage. Guys love working with him because they know that they're going to get a great match out of him, and they know that he's great at making his opponents look great. That is a essential quality in being liked backstage, having good quality matches, and upping your game, upping you in the eyes of management, giving you future opportunities, and yet still, he has yet to get that true big push. Yes, he's won the championship a couple of times, he cashed in, the fans lost their minds, and yet he just hasn't been capitalized and really trusted, I guess. Or maybe there's always been other guys that Vince has eyed, while even if Ziggler is always the guy that's there as the gatekeeper, Vince has always eyed other guys as, well, he's a good hand. You know, he's damn it, he's good in the ring. But I don't know if he can really carry the company, you know. I just don't believe that Vince ever felt that he could carry the company in that way, but always be the guy that could just plug and play in a main event, in a ladder match, in a tag team match, as a singles competitor. He is a chameleon. He is an amoeba. How about that word? I haven't heard the word amoeba since I was in like seventh grade science class. But that's what Ziggler is. Dolph Ziggler is an amoeba. And I mean that as a compliment, that you can do anything with him and he will succeed. He's that damn good. That's what he says, and that's what he is. I could do away with him trying to steal the show. I don't need to him. I don't need. That's the one thing about Ziggler I did not like. I mean, beyond his screaming promos. He was always solid on the mic, but his screaming promos weren't great. But his whole moniker, his whole slogan was, I'm going to do what I always do and steal the damn show. Wait a minute. If you're an athlete in WWE and we're supposed to believe that this is a simulated sports environment and get true emotional investment in characters, how am I supposed to get invested in a character that just wants to make sure he has a good match, even if he doesn't win it? He talks about stealing the show, meaning having a good match. Sometimes winning a match doesn't mean you have to have a great match. It just means beat your opponent. Even if it's under a minute, you just go in and do what you need to do and win. It shouldn't be about explicitly in your slogan and catchphrase to worry about stealing the show, because that insinuates that you want to make sure you have a 5-star match all the time, and it's not so much about winning and losing. That I never liked. I never liked that because it's an exposure of the business when he says that. So, anyway, Ziggler's an awesome hand, and I just don't believe at this stage in his career that, unfortunately, he's not going to get the run that I think many people feel that he deserves. Alrighty, moving on here to the next feud that we had, or the next segment that we had, and it was Braun Strowman versus Drew Gulak. And I mean, what do you expect? There's really not a whole bunch of great stuff to say about this. It's Drew Gulak. I mean, who I think is a good heel. He's got a good, he's good on the mic, but he just continues to get squashed, and so do the B team. It just continued, and it's all about the creating the PowerPoint presentation, showing what he would do if he replaced the Monster Among Men. I don't need, by the way, and this goes not just for the announcers, but just as a general rule for the talent calling each other by their nicknames, it should be done very strategically, not just as a casual addressing of the person. And in this case, when Drew Gulak said that if you replaced the Monster Among Men, no. If you replaced Braun Strowman, it's almost as if they're fearful to actually mention their name because it's not as catchy and cool. Well, that's their name. I don't know. So moving on, this was just a flat segment that did nothing other than say, hey, we need a Braun Strowman appearance. What can we do that's meaningless, but also gets him on the show and hits a couple of finishers? I mean, that's what this was. Okay. moving on to a SmackDown Tag Team Championship opportunity, the New Day versus the Revival. So tag team championships are on the line here. Although, again, I thought WWE said that the automatic rematch clause was antiquated. What happened to that? Did it go away with the wild card rule and put in the garbage? It was just never explained because the automatic rematch I thought was gone. And all of a sudden you just have the Revival getting a rematch automatically for their SmackDown tag team belts. I'm just going to move on because I don't want to go on another rant. So, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder worked over Kofi during the commercial break and beat him down and were really good. As Corey Graves says, and this is true, they're great at cutting the ring in half, which is true. Eventually, Kofi gets a hot tag to Big E, and he dropped Dawson, and then Wilder floored him with a DDT for a near fall, and they have an outside spot. Kofi soared through the air, wiping out both opponents at ringside, and then New Day set up Dawson for Midnight Hour, but Wilder interrupted with a forearm to Kingston. So before a winner could be decided, though, I mean, there was some more back and forth with the Shatter Machine and all that, but Undisputed Era's Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly, they arrived on the scene and beat down all four guys. SmackDown locker room emptied. Although, would I say that it actually emptied? No, I would say it's the select few that actually decided to come out, and NXT's premier faction escaped through the crowd, not before the damage had been done. So, yes, I'm reading this review, by the way. If you want to know where the hell I'm reading this review, if you're like, hey, I think I've seen this, you're reading this. Yeah, I am. It's on Bleacher Report, okay? That's where I'm reading this because I don't want to have to write all these notes because it's all written for me. But I'm giving you my analysis on it. So, here's what's happening here. Again, I'm not going to crap all over this 5-on-5-on-5, just triple threat madness that this Survivor... I don't even know why they're calling it Survivor Series. I would just call it Triple Threat Mania, because that's what this pay-per-view is. With three brands competing in almost every single match beyond Brock Lesnar and Rey Mysterio, and The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan, and we'll get there. Every single match is triple threat, and it's like triple threat to the match with a 5-on-5-on-5. There's potentially like 15 triple threat matches in the one match. It's insanity. I don't understand it. I mean, this triple threat nonsense is... I never want to see a triple threat match again after this. I mean, this is going to just fill my appetite for triple threat matches, which is almost zero anyway. And make me never want to see one in the rest of my life. I mean, let's just be honest. But so here's the thing, although, while this match was good, and I would have loved to have seen it gone longer, I think, this had a potential for a very good match. I just don't understand how NXT's even still invading. I mean, this is the third week in a row now that SmackDown has gotten invaded, Raw's being invaded, and how are guys even getting in the building? I mean, yeah, they're coming through the crowd, but there's only, you know, X number of exits and entrances to the building. If you really didn't want NXT stars there and stop ruining your matches and attacking your stars, couldn't you just put security at the, you know, those entrances, or put even the guys and gals that don't have anything going on that night at the entrances? Instead, they just wait. And then there's like a 30-second delay before the only select few of the SmackDown locker room or Raw locker room come out, just to even the odds just enough so that NXT can retreat. It's just, oh man. I mean, this is a whole Survivor Series pay-per-view. It used to be a pay-per-view I loved. It used to be a pay-per-view that I looked forward to every year. It used to be a pay-per-view that it was one of my top three of the year. And now it's just become this fabricated drudgery of unbelief, of just suddenly everyone being injected with this brand supremacy and brand loyalty drug that they all go, damn it, I don't care what you've said about my family or what you've done to me, we're going to make sure that our brand is supreme because we want to make sure we're the supreme brand. That's what's happening here. It's nonsense. Just because WWE wants a gimmick for every pay-per-view that it's just built to, oh, well, calendar turn to November. That means it's brand versus brand versus brand. And same with Hell in a Cell, that's just contrived and forced every year. No matter what rivalries are going on, damn it, put them in the cell. Elimination Chamber, same thing. TLC, well, whatever's going on, you get a tables match, you get a chairs match, you get a ladder match. I don't need these stipulations unless they're warranted. I don't need them because then they mean less. They mean more when they're needed and brought up for a reason, to end a rivalry, to continue a rivalry, or whatever. I don't need it just automatically built in beforehand. Every pay-per-view that has this kind of gimmick, and Survivor Series more than any other, is guilty of this. And this is all for WWE trying to make sure that every pay-per-view has a gimmick, as if they think that makes and sells more. No, it doesn't. You know what sells more? Great storytelling, emotional investment, building stars, not leaning on the superficial brand crap that all of a sudden you're drafted somewhere and you have this undesirable or unquenchable thirst to make sure that your brand is supreme. And then at the end of it, no one remembers anything, no one cares, no one wins anything, there's nothing on the line. It's nonsense. SmackDown got swept last year, and what happened? Oh, yeah, the answer is nothing. The only positive, the only shining light, the only silver lining in this entire thing is that NXT is getting great exposure. Even if they don't win, I don't even think it's about them winning. Right now, it's about them getting exposure on and in bigger audiences and in front of more eyeballs. That's exactly what they're doing, and that's a damn smart strategy. I don't think it's about them winning. I'm sure they'll win a match or two at Survivor Series, and that's fine, and that's great. But to me, it's about them just getting exposure on a bigger platform, and bravo to that. That is what is, to me, the winners here are NXT. I don't care if they actually win their matches, because now you have more people going, oh, wow, so these are the people on NXT? Maybe I'll tune in Wednesday. Yeah, it's just called cross-promotion on your own damn brand. Smart. Smart. So that I do like. That I do like. Okay, moving on here, because I'm going to just go on another, you know, nonsensical rant. So we got Heavy Machinery in action. And they ended up winning here. And, I mean, I don't know. It was Kip Stevens and Kevin Timms. Those were the names. And they won with the compactor. And, okay, again, this felt like a Braun Strowman segment. Get them on TV. I could also do without here of WWE just pointing out Otis's belly, or that he's, you know, proud of his belly or whatever. That I don't need that. I mean, I don't need it as a, like, I don't need to view Otis as a big huggable teddy bear. He's entertaining, and he is Heavy Machinery. He is clearly the star of Heavy Machinery. But I don't need WWE making light of and almost joking that he likes to expose his abdomen. They always do it. I don't know. I don't need it. But I like Heavy Machinery. They have a bright future, and Otis is clearly the star here. All right. Nikki Cross versus Bayley. So Nikki Cross, I think here, she had a good showing. This was a good match. They had some good near falls. I like that Bayley and Sasha got a promo before the match, as Sasha is team captain. And that's the one thing I do like also this year. You want another positive? They aren't fighting like cats and dogs to be the team captain. You don't hear a lot of that other than all of a sudden people are just being appointed that position. And that's fine. I don't need people fighting like children of who's going to be the captain of the team, as if that has some kind of real benefit. There's zero benefit. So I'm glad that they're just being self-appointed or just randomly appointed. I don't care. I'm just glad that that's not a thing this year. So eventually the action broke down. The referee sought to regain control. And Cross drop Kai with a twisting neck breaker for the pinfall victory. So this here ended up being a tag team match, because slightly into the match, we had Tegan Nox, Dakota Kai, Rhea Ripley, and Mia Kim interfering as per the NXT usual. So Bayley didn't get a whole lot of one-on-one with Nikki, but this ended up being a very good tag team match. I really enjoyed this. Rhea Ripley is clearly the star here. Weird that you see Rhea Ripley and Shayna Baszler fighting on the same side, right? I won't even get into it. But they had a very nice NXT versus SmackDown moment here. And having SmackDown defeat Team NXT was the first time that I can think of that NXT took a loss. And I enjoyed that. I think that that adds a little bit of momentum behind SmackDown, and not so much that NXT is all of a sudden this overpowerful brand that no one can overtake and just continues to interfere. So we had Team SmackDown defeat Team NXT, which, again, surprising but nice. And I really enjoyed it. I think that this was a nice, solid match, and it showcased the women very well. I thought Dana Brooke had a bit of a standout performance, too. She's been kind of awkward. Dana Brooke's just weird, and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I'm not slamming her, but I'm not complimenting her. I'm just pointing out facts that Dana Brooke's just kind of a weird cat. I don't think she knows who she is in terms of a wrestling character. As a person, I'm not questioning her. But as a wrestling character, and to her credit or to her defense, Dana Brooke hasn't been on TV a whole lot. And when she is, she's there as kind of the support role, or there to take a pinfall, or there as someone's lackey, or there to just be killed by Ronda Rousey. I remember that after Ronda Rousey had her kayfabe slamming promo on YouTube. I remember that very clearly. So does Dana Brooke need a little more in-ring time and character development? I think so. I think she needs more character development than anybody, honestly, because she is a hell of an athlete. And I think people overlook Dana Brooke a lot, and they shouldn't. I think Dana Brooke has a lot to offer if given the opportunity. And I think there's more there than meets the eye. And you see flashes of it. You see flashes of it. And so anyway, that's just a compliment, I think, to her. So moving on here. So we finally get to the final match here. Daniel Bryan joins Miz TV. And this isn't even the final match, the final segment, I should say. And there was some tension between Daniel Bryan and The Miz. Even at one point, The Miz, I felt like, kind of turned heel again, you know, sticking it to Daniel Bryan, calling him mentally unstable. And he thinks, The Miz thinks, that The Fiend thinks he's washed up, and that he wants to be the one to end Daniel Bryan. And that's where I said, what's The Miz doing here? And there's a storied rivalry here with The Miz and Bryan. I mean, there's no love lost. It was never brought up, but it's in the mind of at least myself and probably many other fans that The Miz and Daniel Bryan just have a good chemistry. There's a heated rivalry there, all the way back to Talking Smack when before Daniel Bryan made his return, when people thought Daniel Bryan was going to come out of retirement to shut The Miz up. And then, obviously, they did have a program after The Miz or Daniel Bryan came back, and they teased it and teased it and teased it and eventually got around to it. But I think, you know, could these two have another program? Sure. But right now, it's about the Fiend. So they say, or The Miz said that Wyatt is also drawn to Bryan because not only is Bryan mentally unstable, but Wyatt is also unstable. And before Bryan could go on, the Firefly Funhouse interrupted, and that Wyatt said he'd been talking about someone else. Talking about someone else isn't nice, and suggested that Bryan knows why the Fiend attacked. And if he doesn't remember, Wyatt does. So I was trying to think about what he was talking about. I remember Daniel Bryan being hypnotized almost by the Wyatt family and kind of faux joining them and turning on them. So maybe that's what he's alluding to. So Wyatt said, if Bryan wants a shot at his new favorite toy, all he has to say is one magic word. Bryan refused and said if Wyatt wants to fight, they should fight, but they should do it for the title. Wyatt enthusiastically led the crowd into yes chants before the show ended on an awkward note. That's what Bleacher Report has as their writing here. This not only did Wyatt change the Universal Championship from red to blue, which I'm fine with because they're SmackDown and SmackDown's blue. Fine, whatever. I really don't have a whole lot to comment on that. I do like the belt blue. I like that better than the red. Just personal preference. I honestly don't have a whole lot to say about the change of color. I guess I like it. But The Fiend versus Bryan, this was a weird segment because Wyatt said that if Bryan wants a shot at his new favorite toy, all he has to say is one magic word. We all know what that word was of yes, of course. But then Bryan said that he refused to, but if they want to fight, they should fight, but do it for the title. Well, that's what Wyatt was saying, was that if you want a shot at my new favorite toy, the title of, I don't like Wyatt referring to the title as a toy. It's like referring as, all I can hear is JBL. Anytime there was a weapons match of sorts or a street fight, anytime there's chairs or kendo sticks involved, JBL would always kind of in a wink nod way of here come the toys. And it would just make me want to punch him in the face. And this, I don't like things that are supposed to be taken seriously be called toys. It's such a childish thing to do that there's no reason to call them that other than it's just a cute way to call something else. I don't know. But anyway, so I didn't understand that because Wyatt was referring to, if you want a shot at my toy, AKA the championship, you just have to say one word. And Bryan said that they should fight, but do it for the title. So they were saying the same thing. That got confused on that. But then Wyatt, of course, did the yes chance and thing. So what was weird was then The Miz says, oh, at Survivor Series, it's official. It's going to be Daniel Bryan versus the Fiend. Well, wait a minute. They said that they agreed to have the championship match. How does The Miz know it's going to be at Survivor Series? What inside information did he have? How did he know it wasn't next week on SmackDown? Or maybe at the TLC pay-per-view? I mean, this is the kind of thing that I know what they were going at, and we all assumed it was going to be at Survivor Series, but there was no connection there. There was no gap filler for us to say, oh, well, that's why it's going to be at Survivor Series. No, neither Bryan nor Bray Wyatt said that I want this to happen at Survivor Series. The Miz just announced it as such, and it made no sense. From the perspective of, are you just assuming this, Miz? Or is WWE giving you this line thinking that we all think it's going to be at Survivor Series, so I'm just going to tell you it is, even though it could be at any time? I mean, does anybody understand what I'm saying here? Maybe I'm talking in circles, but I don't know. So this, honestly, I mean, as much as I really had hit this hard, this SmackDown show hard, I honestly overall didn't hate the show. So I really thought it was a solid show from the perspective of the NXT women. I like their tag team match. I didn't like the big dog thing. You guys know that. Brian and the Fiend is interesting to me. I don't know where they go from here. Do I think Brian wins? The answer is no. I mean, that's not a spoiler alert. It's just, how can anyone believe that the Fiend is going to drop the belt to Brian? I mean, it's just too soon. We haven't seen the Fiend fleshed out as champion yet. And so I also like the fact that WWE showed restraint in actually bringing the Fiend onto the program. Again, less is more with the Fiend, and I think they're understanding that. So, all right. Well, interesting SmackDown. We have a couple more shows to go before the actual pay-per-view of Survivor Series. And again, that review show will be done next Saturday with Ashley as we go match by match and cover the weekend wrestling next Saturday. But again, tomorrow I'll be back with Zach Perez as we cover our favorite memories of our local arena here and some huge, huge moments on Raw, which we were live for. And of course, don't forget, on Tuesday, Anthony DeMarco will be joining me for a Raw review. Wednesday's Wrestling Nostalgia. Thursday, Friday is the NXT and AEW review. And then, of course, Saturday, as I mentioned, is the Survivor Series, official Survivor Series prediction preview show. And somewhere lumped in there, maybe I'll do it on Wednesday as my Wrestling Nostalgia show, we'll be doing a live show where maybe I'll have a Wrestling Nostalgia slash kind of current events and current thoughts show. And don't forget, anytime I do record live, again, as a reminder, when I record live, the platform I record on of Blog Talk Radio seems to dumb down the audio a little bit in terms of quality. The volume is fine, of course, but the quality seems a little more radio and a little less podcast, if that makes sense. And I'm working to see if they can fix that and give me like some kind of high def studio or something. But guys, so that's all I have for the SmackDown review. Again, if you'd like to hit me up on Twitter at the WWE Podcast or email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can also head on over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast if you want to get yourself an ad-free experience, support the show, get a shout-out, come on and have your own podcast with me, and a whole bunch of other free stuff that you can get on patreon.com. Cool stuff, I should say. And it's a blast. I really would like to have you on board. And head over to the website at WWEpodcast.com. So lots of ways to get in touch. Check out the content. Lots of bonus stuff. Ad-free stuff. Really, this show is because of you guys. Because of you. And as always, you know, it's a therapy session for me. So, all right. Well, guys, thank you so much. I'll talk to you next time.